bonus.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, the Seahawks super fan. We have got a huge slate of game recaps for you from all across the league. We've got some highs, some lows, some wins, some big hits. We have my team at home. No, I will not spoil how that went until later, but I am probably from the sound of my voice, you can tell, not terribly unhappy with the way that went, so that's great. So let's get right to it. We're going to start off with a Sunday night game.
All right, and here I am with the Chicago Bears superfan, Tom. Probably not super excited to talk about the Bears and Bucks game, but here's the floor, Tom. Take her away.
Okay, well, there isn't a whole lot to say about this game other than the Bears really suck. This was a horribly sloppy game. I know they played, you know, the Atlanta Falcons, you know, pretty well last week, but what got by most people is the fact that they had to practically play a perfect game because they have almost no room for error. And that certainly came across today. They had four turnovers, and the Buccaneers took advantage of all of them to score points and rack up a 29-7 victory. Before I start ramming on the Bears, give the Bucs a little bit of credit. They made plays when they had to. The only thing I would say is don't judge your team by this game because they played a really bad football game. The Bears, no kidding, they might be the worst team in the NFL, and that really came out today, even independent of all the mistakes they made. They dropped many balls, four or five drops over the course of the game. They had eight penalties and four turnovers, and you don't win games doing that. But beyond that, this team has no cornerbacks on the field. So defensively, what they do is they play a two-deep zone. And the Buccaneers, like most good teams will do, they picked it apart. And then whenever the Bears, varied it up, changed it up by putting their receivers into single coverage, Jameis Winston's eyes got almost as big as his helmet. And they took deep shot after deep shot at wide open receivers when they got singled up on the Bears cornerbacks. Winston did not have a particularly good game. I know it sounds odd to say that when they scored so many points, but he overthrew a lot of receivers today. It could have been a lot worse, believe me. And offensively, I think everyone knows the Bears have no wide receivers. They were throwing short over the middle of the field. The Buccaneers sat on those roots, and it resulted in a couple of those turnovers. And of course, they were able to do a better than usual job of stopping the run because they could crowd the line of scrimmage without any fear of the deep ball. And as it turned out, that was justified. They shouldn't have feared it. The Bears have no deep threat, and offensively, this is a very bad football team. Defensively, any really good football team is going to pick them apart or take advantage of those defensive backs. And so this team, I know this may sound really bad, but it might be worse than last year's team. And the injuries are piling up again as well. They went into the game without Kyle Long. They lost their guard, Tom Compton, and then they lost Josh Sitton. So they had backups in everywhere. So this is a team that's in really bad shape and in really bad trouble. And I don't think I'm exaggerating that just because this was a blowout loss.
All right. Well, there you go. Tom is also a team that is a quote unquote fan of a team that is quote unquote rebuilding. Yeah, these ones are tough, but hopefully the future looks better.
They're a laughing stock. They really are. It's going to be a rough year.
Yeah, I heard that. All right. Well, Tom, thanks for coming in and telling us about the game.
Thanks, Rob, for listening to my, for providing me some therapy.
Have a great day, Tom.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan. I am here with Brian, the Green Bay superfan. What's going on, Brian?
Hey, I've been better, but maybe we'll look a little bit better against the Bengals next week.
Maybe. And I'm also here with the victorious MJ, our Atlanta Falcons super fan. What's up, MJ?
Oh, not too much, not too much. Feeling pretty good after this win tonight.
As you can probably guess from those greetings, the Atlanta Falcons prevailed over the Green Bay Packers. I'll just tell you both, somehow, if there was a way for you both to lose this game, I would have felt great about it. I'll have to settle for just one of you taking the L, you being my chief NFC rivals. So the Atlanta Falcons pretty much never were in much danger beating the Green Bay Packers 34-23. As the winner, MJ, we'll start with you. What did you see in this game?
The offense looked pretty good in the first half. The run game was looking good. The pass game was good. The run defense looked a little bit better, but not by much, in my opinion, from last week. The one thing I saw that I did not like at all was the change in tone for the defense in the second half. In the first half, they were damn near on 11 the whole half, but the second half, they toned it down to about 5 or 6 and really let Green Bay, in my opinion, come back too easily and almost take the W.
Yeah, it seems like they would have learned that lesson not to go all prevent in the second half. Brian, your team was down big, but you did start to come back. What changed?
Well, I think it was probably that Atlanta backed off a little bit. We were really undermanned tonight. You know, one of these times we're going to get to play the Falcons and not be down to our, like, fifth and sixth corner or our fifth and sixth tackle like today. I thought initially that McCarthy was calling a pretty decent game, really tried to protect Rodgers. I thought with how loud that stadium was going to be and those two tackles who really hadn't played much football, I thought we tried to do our best to protect Rodgers. But ultimately, I think we ended up sacrificing some of that efficiency. And it wasn't until after Atlanta really called off their dogs that the Packers started to mount the comeback.
Let's be honest, your offense was mostly Ty Montgomery today, obviously outside of the quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. Is that sustainable for a guy of his size?
I think he's a lot bigger than people give him credit for. He's 220 pounds, 223. So I think he finishes his runs. He doesn't shy away from contact. Maybe that's not a good thing, but I tend to like the way that he plays. I think that he, until proven otherwise, I think he should be given the benefit of the doubt that he can shoulder that load, because so far he's shown it.
All right, so MJ, your team was not that impressive last week, but you took on a really, really good Green Bay Packers team this year. I would say, no offense, Tom, a much better team than the Bears, and looked a lot better. So what did you see this week that you weren't seeing last week?
What I saw this week that I wasn't seeing last week, honestly, the defense played a lot better this week than they did last week. As much as I was surprised by how well the Bears played, I was more surprised by how poorly the defense played. But we come in this week, and the defense is on 11, but only for the first half. Had the defense kept up that level of momentum going into the second half, I think the score would have been a little different. I think we would have been further ahead than we were. So, yeah, all in all, the defense surprised me by playing much better in the first half, but then they disappointed me playing worse in the second.
Likewise, Brian, do you attribute the 34 points Atlanta scored pretty much exclusively to the fact that you were on basically the hot dog vendor running out to cornerback? Do you have long-term concerns about this defense? Obviously, from my perspective, they're an incredible, invincible unit with a defensive line that can destroy anybody, but that's because my team was a turnstile against yours last week. So what are your thoughts going forward?
Yeah, I think you and I talked about this exact thing last week. It was, I think it probably is, to a large extent, just the personnel that the Falcons have. You know, we, for whatever reason, tend to play Seattle really well, and for whatever reason, we tend to play Atlanta not so well. And I think, you know, I think I see Randall, Demarius Randall on Julio Jones one-on-one in my nightmares, and I saw that far too much today. And I think from a tackling perspective, we left a lot to be desired in the first half. So I think in terms of the state of the defense, I'm back to being a little bit more nervous. I was a little bit optimistic after last week, but at the same time, I tried to keep that in check just because, you know, the Seahawks offense is not the Atlanta Falcons offense, and I felt like this was going to be a good barometer for us. I think we still have a lot of room to go.
All right, MJ, as the winner, last question is going to be for you. You are now 2-0. I know it's early. Are you feeling like this is the same kind of team you had last year, a potential Super Bowl team?
I feel better about this team than I did last year. Seeing the potential that our defense has to get out there and be ball hawks and limit, I mean, if we can limit Green Bay as well as we did in the first half with the intensity that the defense was playing in, there's no reason this team isn't easily a playoff bound team. I'm not willing to say Super Bowl yet because it's only week two. It's too early to call Super Bowl, but I definitely will go ahead and call playoff team.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Falcons are triumphant, and MJ has guaranteed a Super Bowl victory. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, now to talk about the barn burner between the Buffalo Bills and the Carolina Panthers. The Carolina Panthers do their job at home. They win by a score of 9-3. To hear from the Panthers' perspective, our new Carolina Panthers super fan, Nick, how you doing today?
Doing good, Rob. How about yourself?
Oh, I've seen better days, but we're kind of used to it.
This was an ugly football game, wasn't it? It was pretty if you're a defensive specialist, but it was not a very pretty or fun, enjoyable football game. It was a grind.
Yeah, for sure. How about from your perspective of the game, just kind of what you saw, you know, as a Carolina fan, what you liked, what you didn't like from the game today?
Well, the first thing I need to really talk about and go over is Greg Olsen on the sideline in a boot. This is a big deal because he's had three straight 1,000-yard seasons. He's never missed a game since he started his rookie season in 2007. So it was a big deal to see Greg Olsen out of uniform in a boot. We're hearing that it's actually an ankle injury, and he's going to be going for further MRIs and potential repaired surgery. So, yeah, as Cam Newton's safety blanket, it's a big deal that he's not going to have Cam Newton. That said, he's got plenty of offensive weapons that hopefully over the course of the year he learns to dial in and actually use. So this was an interesting grind of a defensive battle, and if you read my preview from the middle of the week, it's kind of exactly how I called it. I thought this was going to be a bunch of special teams and a bunch of field goals and punts and a true defensive battle because you've got Sean McDermott, new, young, exciting head coach, full of piss and vinegar now that he's got his new gig as a head coach. And the Buffalo defense is not to be dismissed. They are really strong, and they held the potential of the powerhouse Carolina offense in check today. On the flip side of the ball, I mean, defensively, Panthers are back to playing 2015 lights out defensive football. And we got to see that today, even with the potential explosiveness of some of the players that are on Buffalo. You know, it wasn't till late in the fourth quarter there we actually saw Buffalo really get into rhythm and charge down the field. And had Jones actually made that catch, they could have won that football game in the last 30 seconds of the game. So this was a slobber knocker. This was a just good old-fashioned football grind that we, frankly, don't get to see more than one or two times per year. What about you, Rob? What did you think?
Well, I thought, first off, from the Panthers, last year the defensive backs were a weakness. You know, they were playing a lot of young kids, a lot of rookies. It's a weakness no more. They're good. They are. You have a nice little stable, I thought. I mean, granted, the Bills aren't the best receivers in the league, but I thought that, you know, defensively, you're always going to do a good job. But I thought what held you back last year isn't necessarily holding you guys back anymore. I thought your defensive backs played well. The Bills, I mean, and it's kind of the story that's been going on the past couple of years. The defense is, you know, a reasonably well defense. I think they're past that point. I think they're a good defense, you know, even with some of the losses that they've taken, you know, getting rid of their quote-unquote number one cornerback in Darby, you know, getting rid of some other guys as well. Their defense has played well. I thought they played very good this game. I believe they ended up getting a total of 6 sacks, which is great to see. They were better equipped to be a 4-3 defense. You know, they ran the 3-4 the last couple of years under Rex Ryan, and it was just terrible to watch. But their personnel is better suited for a 4-3, and it shows. But, I mean, the offense, at the end of the day, the Bills' offense just doesn't have, you know, the weapons across it to really do serious damage. They do have some weapons, obviously. But when you're able to pulled Shady McCoy to, I think he had something like 12 yards. You know, he did more damage through the air today than he did on the ground. Tyrod Taylor was your leading rusher. Tyrod Taylor threw for only 125 yards. You know, still a close game, obviously, at the end. That's Zay Jones, you know, tough one at the end. You know, he catches that ball. He might have got in the end zone right there, you know, with 10 seconds to play. But I think the Bills, you know, they're kind of building their foundation right now. They weren't expected to do much this year. But, you know, it is still, you know, as a fan, it's going to be frustrating, you know, when you're watching them and not winning games that they can, you know, the defense is setting them up, you know, to potentially win, and they're just not finishing the job on offense. So it'll be interesting to see kind of as the season goes. You know, Tyrod Taylor, the way his contract is set up, he is a he could be released with little consequence. So for him, it's almost a contract year in that, you know, he wants to get the $18, $20 million that's upcoming in his contract. He's got to do it. He's got to do it this year and show, you know, the new guys from Carolina, McDermott and Bean, you know, that he's, you know, the guy of the future for the Bills. And this game, I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, that was the case. He's still working with a lot of newer weapons, so he's going to have to get used to those. So that's going to kind of be a work in progress through the year. But I thought Carolina played good ball. They're not the team they were last year. They're a much better version.
Yeah, the defense has definitely turned around from last year for sure. I think there's an interesting anomaly to this game specifically as well, and that's Sean McDermott knowing to attack the weak left side of the Carolina offensive line. That's why you guys were able to rack up 6 sacks. That's my theory, at least. He knows exactly where to attack Carolina in their weak spots, and it's always been that left tackle, Cam Newton's blind side. So I think that throws a thing in there. I think from the perspective, my perspective of you guys, it's not just going to be a long year. It's going to be a long 2 to 3 years. I think they're pretty invested in Tyrod Taylor. He has proven that he can be a good, mobile, versatile, scrambling quarterback with good accuracy and a good arm. So I don't think they're going to give up on him per se. But, you know, continuing to build over the course of the next 2 to 3 seasons, not just this year, with Bean and with McDermott, I think you guys are on the precipice of potentially building something really special up in Buffalo. So don't be too hard on the guys yet. The next 2 to 3 years could be something really nice.
Oh, no, they're building for the future. I do think that they are going to release Tyrod at the end of the year, though, just given the way his contract is and given the potential of the amount of quarterbacks that are coming on in the draft this year. I think it's all going to be on draft placement and things like that. But I could definitely see them. They restructured it with an eye on getting out of the contract this year. They gave him more money this year in order to kind of change the cap number next year to make it palatable to do. So I think it's at least on their minds. So we'll kind of see how that goes. Shout out to third leg, Greg Olsen. Hope that he gets better. One of my favorite tight ends in the league. So, you know, would like to see him back out on the field. Hopefully it's not too bad of an injury.
Yeah, we'll find out. Hopefully by the time we record on Thursday, we'll know some more information on Greg.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Nick, for coming to hang out with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob.
All right. All right. Next game we're going to talk about is going to be the interdivision rival. This is the Cleveland Browns and the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens played this one at home, ended up getting the win 24-10. And with us, we have both super fans. We have Don, the Ravens super fan, and then we also have Ben, the Browns super fan. How you guys doing?
Doing all right.
All right, excellent. So, Don, your team got the big win here, division win. That's two division wins in a row for you guys. Tell me about the game. How do you think it went?
I mean, offensively, still a work in progress. Not looking very good. Offensive line issues, but again, another 5 turnovers on the day. So they got, you know, 2 games of 5 turnovers apiece. So can't argue with that. Suggs is looking good, especially early on. I would like to see some more, you know, some more deep passing by the Ravens. But I guess when you have 5 turnovers, you can kind of run the ball and kind of command it a little bit more. But, you know, again, disappointed a little bit in the offense, but, you know, can't complain with 5 turnovers on defense and a 2-touchdown win.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Defense came up big for you guys. Ben, obviously, you know, second loss in a row. Unfortunately, you played two really strong defenses within the division. How'd the game go for you guys today?
Oh, man. All right. Overall, this game was, like, very frustrating to watch. First of all, like, stupid penalties. We just kept shooting ourselves in the foot. And we just seemed to love third and long for whatever reason. We just couldn't do anything on first and second down. The one, like, nice takeaway out of the Steelers game, besides being competitive, I was like, well, at least we didn't make dumb mental mistakes like we did under Pat Shurmur. But, like, today it felt like we were being coached by Pat Shurmur, just jumping off sides, pushing off everything. Kenny Britt playing like a bum, doing his best Dwayne Bowe impression, which is very very alarming. I think we almost have to sit him.
Definitely.
I don't think he can play again. That effort
Definitely.
That he did was just pitiful. I mean, I've never seen a guy just like quit like that. That was just sad and hard to see. Hollywood Higgins was the wide receiver we pulled up off of the off of our practice squad. We drafted him in the fifth round last year out of Colorado. He had some nice things. He's about the only dependable receiver that we had. He seemed to have a nice connection going with Kevin Hogan. Kaiser somehow comes out of the game with a migraine, which I've never heard of before for a quarterback. That was weird. But he wasn't playing well before that. I mean, he's just continuing. Like, his mental clock is moved at a glacial pace. Like, when you watch him, you can see the smoke coming out of his ears. His processing speed is really slow. He has
they
to should have
left Hogan
up.
In.
Yeah, Kevin Hogan comes in and hits a spark, gets his our only touchdown drive going. Looks great. I mean, granted, I don't think he's I don't think he's an answer or the future. But the thing that was very evident to me was the difference in processing speed. He was very deliberate, was able to make reads and process and get the ball to where it needed to go. And then Deshaun Kaiser comes. Can't be talking about the Browns without discussing the first tenets of being a Browns fan. Dallas will always give up points before half, no matter what. I literally cannot think of the last time we have not given up a touchdown or a field goal to at the end of a half of a football game. I mean, we're driving, and then we get picked off, and then the Ravens come in with, like, what was it, Don? 5 seconds left, no timeouts, and you guys decide to throw it anyway.
Yep. Yeah. Flacco rolls to the right and finds Macklin right at the goal line.
Yeah. I mean, if I were playing the Browns, I would too, because you know they're going to give it up. It's infuriating. And then Kaiser comes back out after the in the half and just looks awful. Like, throwing three picks, had a fumble, and then Hugh Jackson, just abandoning the run again. It was just, I think we ran the ball all of 14 times in a game, which you just can't do, especially when you have a rookie quarterback struggling. I mean, that is just like that's inexcusable. At one point, we had first and goal on the 1 yard line. He runs a quarterback option sweep with Deshaun Kaiser, then decides to throw it, and the throw was just abysmal. Got picked off right in the end zone, and you just look at there and like, well, what do we have? What do we have the crow for? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. I don't know. It was just bad all around. Bad play calling, bad quarterback play. Oh, just terrible.
All right. Division games, sometimes can get ugly. I think the future is bright, going to be a little brighter for Cleveland. As the season goes on, Baltimore. I'm looking forward to see how Baltimore runs the ball. I know that they've made some changes to their coaching staff. I'm curious to see how that works out for them. All right. Thank you guys for popping in. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan. Right now I'm here with Monty, the Raiders superfan, talking about neither of our teams. The Arizona Cardinals were taking on the Indianapolis Colts in a game that I think most people expected to be fairly one-sided, but turned out to be not sure if good game is the right term. It was a close game. What do you say, Monty?
I just think you got to feel great when at the beginning of the season, Pod Vader picks the Cardinals to win your division, because you're pretty confident that that's not going to happen at the end of the year, which is different for my division. When he picked the Raiders, I'm very, very nervous.
Yeah, I know. As soon as I heard he was picking the Cardinals to represent the NFC West, I started planning my playoff tickets. That was pretty much locked it in. So thank you for that, Pod Vader. Truth be told, this game, I guess at the end, was exciting. The Cardinals did end up prevailing, 16-13? 16-13 was the final score in overtime. in a game that nobody expected to be this close. Now, I know that you were following up a bit with Dr. Jones, our Arizona Cardinals superfan. So what did you guys take away from this?
You know, he's definitely concerned. I think he made a point similar to my both our teams, actually. When you play on the East Coast or play in the Eastern time zones, you're always nervous at those early kickoff games. And so he's just happy to come out with a win. I guess he's a little bit surprised with J.J. Nelson. That's 2 weeks in a row he's actually had at least, if you don't want to go so far to say he had a good game, he had a couple of good plays, some circus-type catches. And, you know, Tyrann Mathieu had a big play. He doesn't know if he'll ever get back to, you know, what he was when he was winning Rookie of the Year. But, you know, he did make a play, made an appearance. And at the end of the day, you know, they kind of fought and clawed their way in to get a victory. And I don't know your take on this, Justin, but I think a guy like Jacoby Brissett coming to a new team, no training camp, picking up a brand new offense, a new coordinator, new teammates, stepping in and playing a game, going for 20 for 37. I know it's not, you know, killer stats, but I think that's a hell of a performance for someone in his position.
Yeah, with how little preparation he was able to have, absolutely. I think that really is very impressive. And I mean, the Cardinals, they came away with a win, but they were not impressive at all. I mean, the Colts led it, had a 10-point lead until there was about 10 minutes left in the game, which is, I mean, and again, this is with not Andrew Luck at quarterback. So, you know, Frank Gore was old man Gore, steady, scored the lone touchdown for the Colts. It really was that it really came down to, in the fourth quarter, that deep pass to J.J. Nelson, something like a 50-yard pass. And that really turned the game around, turned the numbers around. I mean, you know, before that, Carson Palmer would have ended the game with one interception, no touchdowns, and under 300 yards passing. Now his stat line looks somewhat respectable, and it gives him an opportunity to go into overtime, where the Colts start with the ball, and Jacoby Brissett pretty much immediately throws it right into the hands of Tyrann Mathieu, who sets them up for the game-winning field goal. Yeah, I mean, man, ugly game. These teams are bad. Colts are bad. Cardinals are bad. Carson Palmer is bad. Just a whole lot of bad out there.
I got a question for you, though. So, obviously, without David Johnson, the Cardinals' offense is, you know, completely bad, I guess, for lack of a better term. But I guess I was expecting them to do a little bit more against the Colts' defense. I don't know what the Colts did to bottle up Larry Fitzgerald, but they kind of, you know, at least, like you said, they had the lead going into the second half. I was kind of impressed with what the Colts did with no Andrew Luck. They're kind of banged up on their side as well. And just to come out and make this a competitive game, I guess they showed me more than I was expecting to see.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that has more to do with the fact that Carson Palmer is now terrible and less to do with the fact that they were able to contain Larry Fitzgerald and those guys. But I don't know. I mean, a win is a win. You know, Cardinals are now 1-1. So, nobody is 2-0 in this division. So at the very least, they are tied for the division lead. So that's got to be some comfort to Dr. Jones.
And the Colts are only one game out of the division lead in the AFC South. So, you know, they got to just be hoping that, you know, Luck will come back and they'll be right in there to get to 8-8 and compete for the division.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to talking about good teams.
All right. And we're here now to talk about one of the games of the week, the Kansas City Chiefs against the Philadelphia Eagles. KC prevailed 27-20. We're fortunate enough to have both of our super fans with us. Nick, the Chiefs super fan, and James, the Eagles super fan. How you guys doing?
Fantastic. I'm still breathing, so that's a good thing.
All right, fair enough. While you catch your breath, Nick, obviously, big win for you guys. Tell me your thoughts on the game.
Well, you know, I think we broke down really a lot of the key matches in this game really well in our super fan build. It was really a lot about the battle of the lines. And while I was pretty confident in this game, you know, I said this is going to be a 2-score win for the Chiefs. It nearly was, actually. The Eagles got a kind of a garbage time last 8-second touchdown to make it 20-27. Either way, that is sort of deceptive, because this honestly was as close as an NFL football game can be up until about the last 5 minutes of the game. It was like 3-3 for most of the first half. I think it ended. It really, the only thing that broke it open was, you know, a fumbled kickoff by the Eagles that allowed the Chiefs to kick a field goal at the very end of the first half. And then it looked like the Eagles were going to get a similar sort of crazy opportunity at the end of that half, where went through a deep pass. It bounced off of a Chiefs defender and somehow landed in the arms of Ertz, who then ran it down to, I think, about the 10. But their kicker that they just promoted from the practice squad, he missed that kick. And so it went into the second half having been a total defensive struggle. And it was really only in the fourth quarter that the Chiefs' defense really burst out. The Eagles got a touchdown. The Chiefs got a touchdown. But the big plays were few and far between until Wentz, through an interception, was deflected. He backed off of Justin Houston's helmet. Chris Jones caught it. The Chiefs were able to get a touchdown there on a really nice, crazy play with a shuttle pass to Kelsey. Dove in there about 5 yards over a bunch of defenders. And then Kareem Hunt, he ended up with 2 touchdowns in this game, did what Kareem Hunt does, apparently. Two weeks into his career, had another fantastic game with 13 carries for 81 yards, 6.2 average, 2 touchdowns, and he also had 28 yards receiving. So I'll leave it over to James. I don't want to suck up all the oxygen here, because you guys, you still put up a great game here, and especially that D-line, man. I should have been more scared about that D-line.
Yeah, the first half pretty much went as predicted up until Darren Sproles fumbled, like you mentioned earlier, which made it 6-3, and then the crazy play to Ertz at the end. And, yeah, the kicker we signed off Cincinnati's practice squad, ironically enough, pretty much filled in where Caleb Sturgis did last week, missing his first field goal. So the second half, pretty much back and forth, defenses forced each team to go, you know, 3 and out or punt early in the drive. And once it was 10-6, I had hope. You know, the offense pretty much went up-tempo, got the ball out of Wentz's hands pretty early, mixed in a little dive plays here and there, cut down on a lot of the gadget stuff. And like you said, the final turnover, I think really what broke it over even before the Wentz interception was the 53-yard touchdown run by Kareem Hunt. Actually a beautifully designed run play up front, 2 double teams, catching our defense in an aggressive upfield blitz. Took advantage of that. I think there were like 4 men in the backfield by the time the hole opened up, and there was basically Kareem Hunt and the safety who had a horribly bad angle and him off to the races. And then once the interception happened, I pretty much knew the game was salted away until the very end, where, like you said, the last 2 minutes of the game, the Eagles are moving the ball, get that touchdown with 8 seconds left, the recovery of the onside kick, and, you know, the failed Hail Mary attempt. Yeah, pretty much this did come down, like we said, to the line play on both sides, offense and defense. It was mostly our defensive line in the first half, and late in the third quarter and pretty much the majority of the fourth, it was your defensive line. So it pretty much went how I expected, just not the outcome I was looking forward to.
All right. Well, heck of a game. You know, I think both you guys knew no one's got to be terribly sad, because I think you both have good teams. That being said, Nick, I hope your team loses a couple games and just misses the playoffs, but that's only because we have your first-round pick. All right.
At this rate, it doesn't look like we're going to lose any.
I know. I don't like it at all. All right. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Thanks. No problem. Cheers.
I'm joined here with Ken, who I'm going to imagine is not a particularly happy Chargers fan, as the Chargers fail to 0-2. How are the Chargers at 0-2? They've just Chargered it up, haven't they, Jared?
Yeah, it's Ken. But yeah, no, it was another brutal week for the Chargers.
Oh, you alien guys. How do I know?
Yeah, anyways, the game kind of went the way that I thought it would. I knew that the Chargers were going to have trouble stopping Jay Ajayi. But it's the middle of that Chargers defense is becoming a real problem. Despite having, you know, probably the best defensive ends in the league, when the teams can run the ball against you, that really neutralizes the effectiveness of Bosa and Ingram. So I knew that we were going to have trouble there. I didn't think we were going to have as much trouble as we did on our side of the ball running. And Melvin Ingram did not have, or Melvin Gordon did not have a very good day on the ground. And I really wish that Rivers had had more chances to throw. He threw, dropped back 39 times today, but I really didn't even think that was enough, especially in the first half. They were pretty conservative. But in the end, the Chargers definitely had enough to win, but their kicker missed two kicks today, one that would have put them up by two with like 10 seconds left. And all around, you know, the Chargers are used to losing these really close games, and things did not change for the better today, unfortunately.
So it's definitely a boo for Koo. Where's Koo from? Is he South Korean?
I believe so, yeah.
Is he going to be on the team come Monday morning?
You know, my father and I were discussing that, and I would not be surprised if he was cut. But the Chargers are, I don't have any trust in them. I don't have faith in them to make sound decisions at this point. So I imagine he'll be on the team, even though at this point I wouldn't mind to see him go.
Okay, a few questions about the game, Ken. How can Philip Rivers complete 31 of 39 passes for 331 yards for a passer rating of 110 and you lose?
Well, you know, I have no idea because he had a signature Philip Rivers day, but missing two kicks is brutal. Missing two kicks is huge. I don't know, man.
I see Keenan Allen had 9 catches, 100 yards. Hunter Henry had a good day. Were you just struggling on third down?
No, it was nice to see Henry come back. And I will say that having Keenan Allen back in the offense makes a huge, huge difference as the security blanket for Rivers. Third down was bad today. I don't know. I haven't been thrilled with the play calling through two games.
What's missing?
I think they rely on the run too much. They tried to get cute with fullbacks on short downs early in the game, and that did not work. It ended up working out, but I want to see Rivers and shotgun a lot more.
And is Melvin Gordon struggling because of the offensive line, or is he just struggling?
Yeah, today there was no holes for him to work with, and we lost our right tackle as well. Which does not help. So hopefully Barksdale will be back because next week against the Chiefs is probably going to be a make or break game for the Chargers season.
Yep. And see, he had 9 carries for 13 yards, a 1.4 yard average. That's not going to cut it, is it?
Not at all. Not at all.
And what about your defense? How did that look? You restricted the Dolphins to 19 points?
Well, the middle of the defense, like I said, is pretty porous. I'm pretty disappointed with our linebackers right now. But the corners have been great, Hayward and Verrett. And then, obviously, Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa were awesome in the first game. They kind of took a step back today, but I expect they're going to be just fine for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and Jason Verrett missed the game today. So who would that be right?
Oh, yeah, you know what? You're right. He did. But our corners played well today.
Yeah. What did you make of Cutler then? You're one of the first guys I've seen Cutler play.
I was hoping he was going to throw a pick six. But he looked all right. He was mobile. He was able to move around a little bit. But the Chargers defense, they weren't the best today.
And I see Jarvis Landry caught 13 passes for 78 yards. I mean, what was he doing, catching the ball and sort of sitting down?
Yeah, the Chargers are actually pretty good at getting him on the ground as soon as he caught the ball. He was catching a lot of short stuff.
And what were the key moments in the game, if I was watching the highlights later?
Oh, man, it's got to be the two missed field goals, especially the one at the end. That, for me, is the difference.
Yeah, it was certainly difficult to. I saw the last field goal, the field goal miss, but you kind of thought, I mean, that wasn't that far out. He should have nailed that, really, shouldn't he? I mean, that's totally gutting.
Yeah, it was brutal. I mean, losing 2 weeks in a row by field goals is brutal. but it's something we've come to expect.
Yeah, although you'd say the one you you didn't tie it up with last week, that missed field goal, that probably wasn't the kicker's fault.
Yeah, but
or are you are you?
I know. I don't care at this point. I just want to win, man.
So you got the Chiefs next week. That's at the Chiefs, is it?
Brutal. It's going to be a brutal game. It's going to be, you know, probably we're going to figure out whether the Chargers are done pretty early this season, and it's going to happen in Kansas City.
Well, was it 9% of teams make the playoffs after losing their opening two games? So so things not looking good on that front. But I can imagine next week you're going to go out there, you'll probably thrash the Chiefs. Typical Chargers.
That would not surprise me, but I'm not going to be holding my breath.
Okay, give the Chargers fans something to look forward to, something to grasp hold of. And, of course, tell us about Antonio Gates, who didn't he catch the touchdown to break the record for touchdown receptions by a tight end in the history of the game?
Yes, he certainly did. So it was great to see Gates get that record, become the all-time leader in touchdowns for tight ends. And then something to look forward is Hunter Henry didn't really play very much last week, but he was out there today and he looked great. So it was nice to see him get back involved with the offense.
Yeah, one of my things about this season, one of my big picks for this season was him going to the Pro Bowl. So he needs a few catches.
Yeah, he's today he looked great. Hopefully he can repeat today rather than last week.
Yeah. Well, Ken, I hope next week you get off the mark with a win and a division win and get your season back on track. Thanks for coming on. When you've lost the game, that just shows what a dedicated expert you are.
Thanks a lot, Neil. See you next week.
See ya.
Kevin, our Cowboy superfan, you only had one job to do today to help out Raider Nation, and you really let me down. Just want to ask you, how was your first matchup with the AFS? What are your takeaways from your first matchup with one of the superior conferences in the league?
The superior conference in the league? I mean, obviously there's not much positive to take away from this game as we're currently watching replays of Aqib Talib take a pick six back 100 yards. But, I mean, the Cowboys just were completely outplayed on both sides of the line of scrimmage, and that was the difference of the game, especially on the defensive side of the ball. C.J. Anderson just trampled all over the Cowboys. First half really was set the tone for the entire game. Cowboys were barely on the field. They had 5 first downs, I think, to the Broncos 17. Cowboys defense was exhausted by the end of the first half. They were just on the field for way too long. And then on the offensive side, the Cowboys could not get nothing running the ball. Ezekiel Elliott probably finished the game with less than 15 yards.
Wasn't this game the one with the lightning delay?
Yes, it was. There was a lightning delay for about an hour, 15 minutes, I want to say.
Did that screw up the game flow, or from what you're saying, it kind of sounds like that might have helped your defense catch their breath?
I mean, it happened at the end of towards the end of the first quarter, so we still had the whole second quarter, which we did not really put up any resistance on the defensive side. Basically, you can't win a game if the offensive line just mauls you the entire game, and that's exactly what happened today. I mean, there were a few positive spots, and that's DeMarcus Lawrence continues to get pressure. He had 2 more sacks today. I'm not going to say all negative things about the defense. I mean, if you look at the score right now, it's 42-17, but they made some plays. Two turnovers, a nice strip sack by DeMarcus Lawrence that tied the game at 7-7, essentially, because we were on the 3-yard line after that. And then after that, it was just downhill. We were just outplayed. We were out-physicaled, not a word, but we were beat up. We were manhandled, and that's the bottom line here. You can't win when – let me just see. I'm trying to get C.J. Anderson up on the interwebs here, but my internet's not going very fast. So
25 carries for 118 and a touchdown.
Yeah, and it looked a lot better. I mean, that's really good, but it looked like looked like 200 yards. It was just every play, 5-6 yards every time minimum. I mean, I guess at the end of the game that we sort of stopped them a little bit, but that's because the game's over. They're obviously running the ball to melt the clock there. So all in all, really disappointing performance on the Cowboys, the defensive line to in stopping the run. Offensively, we couldn't get anything going. Dak looked like he was forcing the ball to Dez at the end of the game. I mean, the pick six that he just threw, it was fade to Dez in the end zone. Aqib Talib just completely knew it was coming. Looked awful. Looked like a rookie mistake. So, I mean, go.
I was going to say, before the game got out of hand, though, so my question for you is, in the last couple of years, it kind of like, you know, with Trevor Siemian at the helm and this elite Denver Broncos defense, if you wanted to attack them, you had to try to run the ball. The Cowboys have one of the best offensive lines. I was kind of hoping that, you know, that narrative still remained true, because your team probably has the best offensive line. My team has one of the best offensive lines, and I got to play them two more times this year. I'm hoping that that formula still helps to attack this defense. And it does not appear like that happened at all today for your squad.
Well,
have they beefed up their defense? What happened? Is it just?
I mean, they tried to beat up their defense. They got that big body Pecco from Cincinnati. He made some plays, but like as I was saying, just the game flow sort of prevented the Cowboys from doing their thing. The Broncos got up early 7-0. They had a lot of time of possession in the first half. The Cowboys couldn't really establish anything because they weren't on the field very often for very long. And their defense just couldn't stop anything. That's why we were on the field. At one point, I think the Broncos converted eight third down conversions in a row, seven or eight third down conversions in a row. You're not going to win like that. We had plenty of opportunities to make those plays on defense. But we just didn't. Horrible tackling. I haven't even mentioned that. I couldn't even count how many missed tackles we had. Horrible angles to the ball. Byron Jones, I'm really getting fed up with him. I mean, he never makes any plays. He never makes an impact play. He's solid. I don't even know if he's solid. You just never hear from him all game. And everything I read is like, oh, he's solid safety. He's just very consistent. But I don't want that. He literally makes no noise in the game whatsoever. He's an invisible man. He's an invisible man. Never tackles for loss. Never interception. Never anything. It's really disappointing. Jordan Lewis, his first NFL debut. He did have an interception, so that's sort of positive. But there's not
Jason
much positive to take away from this game.
Jason Witten had a good game.
He did have a good game, and he also dropped the touchdown. He should have had two touchdowns. He dropped the touchdown. He was steady Eddie again, like he always is. He probably had a six catch, 50 yard performance, touchdown, something like that.
10 for 97 and a touchdown.
Oh my goodness! Can you believe that?
The good news is, Kevin, this is only one game. Awesome against the Giants last week. This is only one game. Maybe it was the altitude. Maybe the missed tackles were a result of all those dispensaries that they legalized out in Colorado. But it only counts for one loss.
No, I'm not too concerned, honestly. I mean, it was a throttling. The Broncos completely. Kudos to them. I was a little bit too cocky going into the game. It's what I get. But I'm not really that concerned. The Broncos have a great defense. Their offense looked sluggish, but I mean, we will improve. It's only week two, as you said. And if we can take one positive out of this thing. Dan Bailey, our place kicker, 56-yard field goal, right down the uprights, just showing Del Vecchio how things are done.
I love it. All right, man. Sorry about the result for a lot of different reasons for you and especially for me, to be honest with you.
I'm sorry we couldn't help you out. And the Eagles, our fellow NFC East brethren, lost to the I'm sorry the NFC failed you this week, Monty. I know it.
I'm gonna have to think of some jokes I can throw it on the Twitter for you. But I appreciate you taking the time to call in, man. I always look forward to hearing from
you. You too, Monty. Talk later.
All right. Next game we're gonna talk about is a game I don't really want to talk about because I hate talking about the New England Patriots winning. However, they did play the New Orleans Saints today and got the win 36-20 in New Orleans. With us to talk about the game is Chris, the Saints super fan. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Good, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I mean, both our teams lost today. I hate seeing New England get a win, so it makes me a little sad. Was definitely rooting for you guys. What happened? How'd the game go?
I'm going to try to keep this as optimistic as possible, but this was foreseen by everybody. The Patriots had 10 days coming off of a loss. They're 36-4 in the Belichick era after a loss. Saints had a short week. That's the optimistic side of things. Frankly, and there was miscommunication on both offense and defense. I get the defense is young, but it's a tired excuse at this point. And frankly, I think it's time to pull up the stakes and start to sell. I think it's done.
Yeah, it looks like Brady went off 447 yards. Looks like he completed over 75% of his passes. They were able to run. Looks like they were able to run the ball a little bit as well. But for New Orleans, obviously the offense looked okay. I mean, Breeze, I don't know how much of it was garbage time play, but Breeze threw for over 350 yards. I think it probably just came down to the young defense. I'm curious only, and I ask this only because it seemed to get a lot of national media play. But Adrian Peterson, what were your thoughts on him during the game? Did he get a little bit more playing time? I know he was a little sad with the amount of playing time he got last week, and this looks like it was kind of a similar deal where they might have been throwing the ball a little bit more, late in the game. What's your opinion just in general, I guess, in that situation?
He's a name. It's nothing else. He should have got less carries. It's a mistake to continue to jog him out there. He's a backup at best at this point in his career. I mean, that's not to diminish what he's done in his career, but he no longer has that first step speed.
Right.
If he wants to, he needs to be a backup, and if that's not a role he's willing to accept, the Saints do have talented running backs on this roster. I think at this point he's only hurting the team by being out there because it's taking carries away from Ingram and Kamara, who both have looked better at this point.
Yeah, I know. I know you just, obviously, for those of you that didn't listen to it, me and Chris were with Neil, and we did a draft podcast, and even before the Saints took Kamara, that was one of your boys. So I'm sure, you and quite honestly, I as well would like to see him to get more playing time because I think he could thrive in this offense. I could see, that perspective, that point of view. I mean, he's Adrian Peterson, no spring chicken at this game. And he's a back that has always done better with volume play more so than just going in and just being like a backup guy. I think that Kamara and Ingram are definitely the lead horses, in that situation, my own personal opinion.
If you take egos out of the equation, I mean, you have a Saints offensive line that's missing both of their tackles. It's Max Unger he didn't really practice all offseason because of a foot injury. This is a really beat up offensive line. So it's really disheartening to see a hole open and then close before Peterson has the speed to get there. It's one of those situations where they have to be able to take advantage of every opportunity, and he's taking that away from them. Frankly, if he was cut tomorrow, I wouldn't bat an eye.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, as an outsider looking in, it almost feels like that's the inevitable conclusion, is that at some point, because he was already showing frustration and yelling at his coach in the first week. And, I feel like that eventually it's just going to be like, just for the culture of the locker room, they're like, get rid of this guy. Especially when you have two capable guys like Ingram, and I'd really like to see Kamara in this offense get as much of a share as possible. I think it'd be fun. I like him. I think he's going to be good. But I guess it is what it is. They did give him a little bit of money, but, you know, it's the NFL, so you can easily get out of that.
Right.
How do you feel just kind of going, you know, the rest of the year with the team? See, the injuries with the offensive line, is that something that's going to kind of improve as the year goes on, or?
I mean, not to get too doom and gloom, but frankly, I think this season, I think looking at this season's a mistake. Honestly, if there's somebody willing to give draft picks for players, I would start to sell. It's going to kill me to see Breeze in another uniform, but I think that's going to be the conclusion at the end of this season anyhow. Might as well get a high draft pick early. I'd sell. I'd sell everything that's not a second to third year player that they can. So there's not a lot of everyone. Teams that start 0-2 have a 7% chance of making the playoffs in the modern era. This will be three consecutive 7-9 seasons. There has to be a change, and Breeze is not going to stick around for a rebuild. So we missed out on Mahomes. We can't miss out on the opportunity next year to replace Breeze. We need the assets. We need to rip this Band-Aid off and time to move forward.
Yeah, as someone whose team has traded a lot of their assets for, you know, upcoming draft picks, it's secretly super fun. But I mean, obviously this game, like the Bills game hurt today, but I got two firsts, two seconds, and two thirds. So it's going to be fun coming up. I know the fun's out there. But Chris, thanks for calling. Always good chatting with you. You know, and obviously looking forward to some NFL draft chats coming up in the next couple months.
Hey, you know, that is when you and I seem to get our most work on this show. That's because that's what we enjoy the most. So that's what I'm looking forward to, is let's get Neil and get this draft podcast rolling again.
Let's do it, man. All right, man. Thanks for calling in.
Later, buddy.
So I'm here with Jared, the Los Angeles Rams super fan. And Jared, I apologize, because at some point I'm going to say something else about the Rams in terms of where their location is, but I'll try and stick with LA as long as I can. Tonight, the Washington Redskins somehow tried to throw it away endlessly throughout the game, especially in the second half, but finally came out with a win. And to be honest, Jared, I thought it was a bit of a surprising win. 27-20, capped off with Mason Foster intercepting Jared Goff deep in Rams territory to really round off the game. What did you make of the game?
You know, I was kind of nervous when I saw just about every football predictor, pundit, whatever you want to call it, picking the Rams to win, because that's generally not what I'm used to. And usually whenever that happens, and this is famous as the Jeff Fisher era, whenever we had a big win, we would almost always lose the next game. So, yeah, I mean, the Rams looked great last week and they kind of came back to earth this week. And I think it was an interesting game because they said, oh, well, McVay knows Redskins so well. But yeah, the Redskins know McVay really well too. So I think it really wasn't that much an advantage and maybe a disadvantage for the Rams. And yeah, they just made so many, they just didn't score enough when they got close to the red zone. And man, that last interception was just horrible. He just stared down Pharaoh Cooper and threw it right to, yeah, I think he said Mason Foster. Yeah, right to the linebacker. So, well, hopefully he'll learn. He's young. I think he's not as good as he was last week. Goff isn't, and he's not as bad as he was last year. So I think there's going to be a lot of ups and downs this year with him.
Well, he finished the game, 15 out of 25 for 224 yards, one touchdown, one interception, or that one, of course, at the end. But he's a different player to what we saw last year.
Yes, I agree. He is definitely better, and I think the coaching helps. And then, but he's almost like a rookie, doesn't he? This is his ninth start. He's 22 years old. I mean, that was, I don't know if you call it a rookie mistake, but definitely a young player mistake. And yeah, he's making improvement. At least Gurley looked a lot better. But yeah, it was, if the Rams would have won, I would have been happy they kind of pulled one out they didn't really deserve. But yeah, ultimately, I think the Redskins played better and they deserved the win.
Yeah, maybe. So the story of the game was Washington went out to a 3-0 lead early with a 41-yard field goal from Dustin Hopkins. Then the Redskins got a touchdown drive, 6 runs, covering 60 yards. We ran it all the way down. And that was probably one of the keys to the actual game. Once you sort of see the final score here, Washington were running the ball really, really well. I think, pretty much the whole game, they went well over 200 yards in rushing. So anyway, that was 10-0. Then another field goal after Norman caused a fumble from Todd Gurley. Redskins got a field goal out of that. But hey, you know, Jared, I thought that was a huge turning point in the game because Washington did their usual let's try 2 fades into the back of the end zone. And for Washington, that never works. We haven't completed a fade since about 1964. And at that point, it just felt like a turning point. You know, we settled for the field goal. Okay, it was 13-0. But then you guys went straight down with that terrific 69-yard pass from Goff to your rookie tight end, Everett. And you finally ran that in to 13-7. And I felt like a huge... I was deflated as a Washington fan. Washington Twitter was going crazy. And then you got it to 13-10. Yeah, on you go.
I was just going to say, yeah, the Rams, after the Gurley fumble, holding them a field goal is big because it's still a 2-score game. And then, yeah, the 2 Rams touchdown drives, they were just kind of throwing the ball downfield, quick, great drives. They looked great, those 2 drives. And then the rest of the game, just kind of blah. And, I mean, they could have been down 17-0 easy. And I guess they kind of clawed their way back to tie it in the fourth quarter at 20. And then, yeah, I was just hoping for a stop and maybe have them come down and win it. But, yeah, they just dug themselves in way too deep of a hole to win it.
What do you think Washington just ran the ball pretty much all day long. And that's not what Washington does. Washington is not a running team by any stretch of the imagination. What did they see last week from the Rams to make them think, yeah, we can just run and run and run and run?
Yeah, I was really surprised. I mean, I was just figuring it was going to be a Kirk Cousin like air out game, and maybe that was part of their game plan, was they weren't expecting the Washington to run, and they did mix it up between their different running backs. It wasn't just one person pounding it, and it was, yeah, the Rams, they've had issues over the years with stopping the run. I don't know if their pass rushes get so like aggressive to go for the sack. And I think they were running a lot early in downs and they weren't maybe expecting the pass, but yeah, they just kept gashing them. And yeah, I mean, that was a good game plan. It definitely worked because I've just been hearing all week like, oh, no one on the Redskins can run. They're just a passing team. And they definitely proved that wrong today.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there was a couple of plays I wanted to get your view on. First of all, the 4th and 6 play where your punter, Johnny Hecker, threw a 28-yard, a fake punt, 28-yard pass he turned up to Josh Reynolds. What did you think about that? Because I was pretty surprised by that one.
Yeah, I was surprised too because that was kind of the Jeff Fisher like thing. Like, I'm always going to go for it on 4th down and punt fake playing more times on special teams than the offense. But yeah, that was a good fake and I guess it was a good time to do it near midfield. But yeah, that was classic Johnny Hecker. Actually, last year he had kind of an off year. He had a couple incompletions on fake punts. But yeah, I guess they still have Jim Fossil as their special, or is it John Fossil? I can't remember their special teams guy. So, but yeah, that was definitely a great move. I think that kind of said a lot, though, that they only got a field goal to tie it, even though they got down inside the 20 on that play. That was kind of a disappointment and a big turning point in the game.
As a Washington fan who has no interest whatsoever in the Rams, I would have to say that what you notice from the Rams is that sort of play just epitomizes the change from Jeff Fisher to a young active, lively young coach who's trying different things, and the whole, I guess, it's just a different atmosphere with the Rams this year.
Oh yeah, definitely a different atmosphere. I mean, their offense is so much better. Their defense wasn't horrible with Greg Williams. I think, I mean, Wade Phillips is just one of the best, if not the best, defensive coordinator. So I think their coaching's better, but they definitely have a different attitude. Like, Jeff Fisher is kind of like, oh, I'm going to have a horrible offensive coordinator just run the ball a bunch, even though everybody else in the league is passing the ball. And it just wasn't going to work anymore with Fisher. But actually, what are your thoughts on McVay, the head coach? I mean, you saw him as an offensive coordinator in Washington. I mean, did you think he was ready? Were you surprised he got a job? Or do you think the teams missed him? Or is it more of Gruden's offense?
I think, well, first of all, I absolutely loved him, and I think everybody in Washington absolutely loved McVay. He was just a live wire, just a breath of fresh air through the entire offense. And you, like you said before, the last couple of years, Cousins has had this air attack, which has been just incredibly good. And a lot of that's down to Sean McVay. Very sad to see him go, but absolutely ready to be a head coach. The guy is. The guy, yeah. What's the phrase? If you're good enough, you're old enough. And he is an inspiring young coach. And I'm hoping he's kind of in there, sort of like as a training couple of years, so he can come back to Washington when he's learned a few tricks, because we want him back. But I think, Jared, there's one thing I wanted to say about the game in your defense of losing it there at the end on that touchdown to Ryan Grant in the fourth quarter. You actually had three of your starting four defensive backs out injured on that play. So that's always tough to defend in the NFL when you're down to your fourth, fifth, sixth defensive backs.
Yeah, they were smart to throw at the undrafted rookie free agent. I mean, I'm glad they got Sammy Watkins, but trading away EJ Gaines, he was he's a number three cornerback, but you lost depth, and yeah, they're definitely thin in the back end. So that's good coaching. Throw at the rookie. That's the way to win ball games.
Yeah. But would you say now, just looking at your team, that you've found your quarterback?
You know, I'd say I'm probably about 90% sure. Yes. I mean, over the 2 weeks, I mean, he's young. I think he's going to grow a lot. McVay is a great coach. He has a good offensive staff. I think so. I think we have. I mean, I think the answer is yes. The bigger question is whether he's like a top like 15-ish quarterback. That's part of the question. I'd say he's a top 20 guy, but there's a big difference between, say, like an Andy Dalton and a Matt Stafford. So yeah. Hopefully he's closer to Matt Stafford than Andy Dalton. But yeah, he's in his ninth career start. He's 22 years old, finally has a real head coach. So I think better days are ahead, but yeah, hopefully he'll have some more victories this year.
Okay, and one of your victories will be, we're looking ahead next week, you're at the San Francisco 49ers, who put up a great defensive performance against Seattle tonight, but a win for you there next week, looking forward?
Boy, I sure hope so, but we were the only team the 49ers beat the last 2 years, so so that's not, although that was with Jeff Fisher, but I'm thinking in my mind that's a win on paper, but definitely nothing I'm going to take for granted, especially on a short week on the road. So yeah, the 49ers almost beat the Seahawks at home, so I don't know if that says more about the Niners or the Seahawks, but yeah, it'll definitely be a good game.
Well, good luck with that one. Washington have the unfortunate task of taking on the Oakland Raiders, which is, that could be extraordinarily ugly. Oh, dear.
Yeah, the AFC West looks really good this year. Yeah, that's going to be a tough game for sure for you guys. But
I mean,
I think
Denver,
you guys are hanging there.
Denver are slaughtering Dallas at the moment, last time I checked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The AFC West, I think they'll have 3-2-0 teams. And then the Chargers, but yeah.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Jared, and I'll leave you to get back to your, I don't know if I'd rather face the Denver defense or face your three kids. I think I'll probably take the Denver defense.
Yeah, it's a toss-up.
All right, cheers.
Thanks, Neil. Good luck the rest of the season with you.
Yeah, you too. See you later.
This is Justin, your Seahawks superfan. I'm here with Charlie, the 49ers superfan, my bitter rival. And like the scallywag that he is, his team tried to steal one from my Seahawks as the 49ers came to Seattle, lost by a score of, 12-9, I want to say, something like that. So, Charlie, everybody expected this to be, let's be honest, a blowout. It was a really competitive game. Why don't you tell us what you saw?
Well, everyone, including myself, as I spoke about last week during our recap show, hoping that you guys wouldn't blow us out. it was nice of you to tell the team not to, because man, that 49ers defense was flying around. I know the tape on the Seattle offensive line is horrible, and I got to see it firsthand. It might be the worst offensive line performance I've ever seen as someone who likes to watch and diagnose the O-line. It was horrible, but very happy to see the Niners stand up there for a little while. But in the end, Russell Wilson's a magician. There's just nothing you can do to stop him. I like the announcer said during the game, he does it so often, it's hard to be surprised anymore. And that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this game really was a defensive effort. My Seahawks defense continues to be as advertised, which is just an absolutely dominant unit. That being said, though, I think the 49ers did a pretty good job against it. The running game was really strong, a couple of really big runs. And for what it's worth, you know, Hoyer, I don't think did anything really egregious or atrocious.
I got to stop you right there. That interception to Bobby Wagner, what are you doing?
Oh, you're right. Okay, that was
I mean, he's looking right at him. He still throws it. Like,
He didn't throw right at him. Bobby Wagner was sitting in his middle linebacker position and read him flawlessly and took a great route to the ball to cut it off before it got to the wide receiver. And then of course, promptly got just nailed and fumbled the ball. Fortunately, the Seahawks recovered. I'm sure he caught a bunch of heat for that. But all in all, I said this in the Slack channel, and I really mean it. You know, watching that game, especially that defense, I can see the building blocks on the 49ers. I think they've got a really good coach now. Like, you know, guys like DeForest Buckner, I'm a big fan of. Reed, as long as he's healthy, which hopefully he is a really good player. I can see the building blocks for what could be better. On the Seahawks side, you talked about the offensive line. I'm not going to disagree with you. I do. And this is going to sound crazy. I almost want to get away from the narrative of the offensive line as a group and start talking about individual players. Last week, the left side played really poorly. This week, they played pretty well, actually. Very little of the pressure seemed to come from the left side of the offensive line. Really, it was Jermaine Ifedi at right tackle. He can't block anybody. It was such a poor effort. I mean, it was sad. And then Mark Lewinsky, who's been kind of a borderline average guard almost, man, he just got destroyed time after time after time. So the end result was trading field goals, and then eventually, you know, your Niners take the lead going into the fourth quarter. And man, I was at that point, I the way the game was going, I was legitimately concerned.
As was I started to feel the upset alert was happening. And but in the end, I mean, the Niners just are unable to score a touchdown, and that was the decision in the game. I mean, that Seahawks defense really was stifling to the air attack of the Niners. There was just not much they could do there. But as you said, yes, they were able to run the ball. But one little wrinkle that I, you know, we'll see if this continues for the 49ers. When they had their OW Kyle Juszczyk playing fullback there in a single eye formation and lead blocking for Hyde, I'll wait to see the PFF grade on that, but it had to be every single time they were 5, 6, 7 yards, including that 61-yarder Hyde had in the second quarter and that 27-yarder to set them up for both those second-quarter field goals. But then they went away from it in the third quarter. It was very, very weird on that last field goal drive. They brought in Matt Breida, the undrafted rookie, to have a couple carries. But really, he was eclipsed by your undrafted rookie, who was phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, definitely got to give a shout out to Carlos Hyde, though. He ran really, really well. And he had good visions, good patience to get to the second level. And like, he cuts and goes. And like, when he cuts and goes, man, he can go. But obviously, Carson, our undrafted rookie, played okay most of the game. That is the final drive is really where he made his hay. I mean, the Seahawks ran a flawless 4-minute drill. You know, and if you didn't see what ended up happening is, you know, getting down to the last 5 minutes or so, Seahawks have the ball down by 4, and then they drive into the red zone like they did several times today. And like he does every time, it seemed like this game, Mark Lewinsky got beat. He didn't put a finger on his man. I mean, it was every quarterback in the NFL gets sacked there basically immediately, except for Russell Wilson. He dodges one guy, takes a step back, looks like another guy's going to wrap him up. So he takes a step forward, and then right before he gets tackled, he just lasers one right at, I want to say it was Paul Richardson, right on like the edge of the end zone. And that's it. 31 other people get sacked there, and he throws a touchdown. Ridiculous. It would be wrong to say he single-handedly won the game, because obviously, you know, you have 11 people on the defense who did amazing. But offensively, I mean, he carried the offense on his back today, but between his runs and his scrambles and what he did when he had a chance to throw. You don't win that game without Russell Wilson specifically at quarterback, in my opinion.
I absolutely agree. I mean, it was frustrating to watch on that last drive. It felt like he was their only weapon, and the Niners really couldn't do anything to stop him. There was no QB spy. I wrote in my preview, I figured Ray Armstrong would be the QB spy at 54, but just couldn't do it. And I mean, good on it for Russell Wilson. He's a fantastic player, and it's just like I was alluding to earlier. It is just like he does it all the time, and it's hard to be surprised anymore.
So that being said, though, I definitely believe that the 49ers are on a good path. What are your thoughts on sort of the long term prospects?
Oh, I think I'm very happy. I mean, really, ever since John Lynch was hired to go along with Kyle Shanahan, I've been just incredibly happy with this regime. Overall, it's going to take some bumps in the road, but that's why they signed a six-year contract. But I can absolutely say if our quarterback play was just a little bit better this game, we win easily. And yes, the Niners' O-line didn't look good. I mean, there was a few pressures they gave up, but overall, I thought their pass blocking was phenomenal. Anytime Seattle was getting immediate pressure, it was because they were scheming it up. Bringing more, four players on a three-man line to the left or right side, including that near safety near the end of the game, was Frank Clark that came and almost got a safety. It was just because there was, three Niners there to block four Seahawks. And Hoyer's got to realize that and get the ball out. But he failed to do that. And good arm, that Seahawks pass rush. That's a scary unit.
Well, there you go. Seahawks victorious in a hard-fought division game against a bitter rival. Charlie, good luck next week.
Yep, you guys as well.
All right, now we're going to talk about one of the games for the 1 o'clock slate, the 2-0 Steelers against the 2-0 Steelers because they won, picking up the win 26-9 against the 1-1 Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings looked real good on Monday night, but ended up losing their quarterback before the game. To elaborate on that, we have Joe, the Vikings super fan. How you doing?
Good. It was a predictable loss once they announced that Sam Bradford wasn't going to be able to go.
Yeah, that kind of put you guys in a tough spot. I was really excited. This is a game I was really excited about as far as games go. And then you hear Bradford's not going to play. You go to Casey Keenum, who obviously there's a huge difference, and really kind of takes the steam out of it. Now you guys are on the road playing Pittsburgh, with your backup quarterback. How'd the game go for you? Like, with some things that you like, things you didn't like, things like that?
Well, I mean, the things that that I liked right off the bat, the defense played really, really well against them in the first half. We were down 14-3 going into halftime. So it was, it was a closer game than the scoreboard depicted. But the bad things are the 14 points that were given up on two big, big penalties. Pass interference by Xavier Rhodes, pass interference by Trey Waynes. And it was pretty much good night from there. We just didn't have the offense. Case Keenum coming in, on a short week, traveling, to the East Coast, not knowing whether or not he was going to start or not. I mean, it was a recipe for disaster as far as that goes. We held Lev Bell to under 5 yards per carry, which, I mean, is a silver lining moral victory there. Rhodes on Antonio Brown, for the most part, shut him down. But there are no moral victories in the NFL, and yes, we are 1-1.
All right. I mean, yeah, you guys, I thought, did a good job against Le'Veon Bell. He had 27 carries for 87 yards, so under 4 yards a clip. Antonio Brown held relatively in check. I know he had, I think, five for 65 or something like that. They just have a lot of weapons. I mean, Martavius Bryant came in 3 for 91, got a touchdown. So, I mean, there's just a lot to cover. But that being said, Minnesota's defense, very good. I think they'll be good all year long. The one question I have for you is your feelings on Dalvin Cook. I know he had 12 carries for 64 yards. Why didn't they run him the ball more?
Well, I mean, when you get down by, you know, by 11 at halftime, there wasn't really much that we could do. The offensive line was not holding up in pass protection, and Cook had a couple of really nice runs that were called back again on penalties. The Vikings had 7 penalties for 126 yards in that game, and I know that 2 of them were on those big pass interference penalties, but it seemed like every time that they would get something going with Cook on the ground, it was getting called back for holding. Just a complete opposite showing from week one by the offensive line. Easton had 2 really big holding penalties that negated a couple of first downs. And so really tough to continue to run the ball when you're behind the sticks like that.
Yeah, I suppose. All right. Well, thanks for calling. You know, get down to 1-1, but team has looked strong. You looked great last week. Assuming Bradford is this is a kind of a 1-week deal, I'm sure you guys will look strong in the upcoming weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Bradford will be back. I mean, he was game time decision today, so.
All right. Then we'll talk to you next week. Have a great day, Joe.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to the Tennessee Titans, who went into Jacksonville today and I think kind of surprised a few people. We've got Ryan, our Jaguars fan. Ryan, why don't you let us know a little bit what happened in Jacksonville this afternoon?
Well, what happened in Jacksonville was an extreme disappointment and looked much more like Gus Bradley's team than Doug Marone's. The first half was close, and it was just 6-3, and then things got completely out of hand, and the final 37-16 score is frankly much kinder than the actual outcome of the game. It was about 30-3 at one point, and that was pretty much it. Didn't see anything good, and it really, sadly, isn't an overstatement to say that this was the biggest game for the Jaguars since 2010. And I don't know if anyone out there is going, what, are you sure? Like, yeah, I'm definitely sure. 2010, it was a kind of overachieving team that had one game to win the division and lost. So since that game, it's just been all misery. They were 1-0, could have gone 2-0, send the Titans to 0-2. Instead, Titans pretty much dominate. Nothing was even that bad besides Blake Bortles with 3 turnovers, but the defense didn't show up quite like it did last week. Defense wasn't terrible. You'll see Derrick Henry had a bunch of yards, but really that was in the second half and kind of when everything started to steamroll for the Titans. So yeah, nothing real great to take from the Jaguars game. Bortles struggled. Defense played well enough for a while to win. And then Titans just started to run away with it. And the offense just never seemed like it was going to score any points. And it really didn't besides garbage time.
So what happened with all the Saxonville Jaguars that I'm reading about on the Twitter? They just didn't show up at all today. The Titans O-line overpower them, or what happened?
Titans O-line was much better than the Texans, for sure. Mariota had time to throw. Still didn't look amazing, but he just made plays that mattered, and Bortles just didn't. He had a couple chances to maybe a drop here or there. Both interceptions he threw, by the way, were tipped, so that was just more annoying. Even the sack fumble he took wasn't that, wasn't that egregious. I didn't feel like he held the ball forever. So the D-line was held in check a little bit by Tennessee. I think I'm not even going to look at the stats. I don't care. I think we had 1 sack, I'm pretty sure. And it was just they did a better job. I still think there's plenty of guys to still make it Saxonville this year. I don't know I don't know what team, if any team in the entire NFL, will get 10 sacks, you know, for the rest of the season. So we'll see, especially, I don't know, we'll just see as the season goes along if week one was a fluke or if week two was a fluke, you know. Guess we'll have to see.
For sure. I guess a couple of follow-up questions. The first would be how your receiving core looks with that number one wide receiver. Looks like Allen Hurns got a touchdown, Marquise Lee, and really that's about it. Is that kind of the only weapons you have as going forward?
Yeah, so Hurns got all his stuff pretty much mostly in garbage time. He had a key kind of catch that you thought maybe would turn things around. Marquise Lee was pretty much the main guy, and he was okay. Wasn't anything great. Wasn't as good as you saw Marquise Lee play last year, and nobody looked as good as Allen Robinson does. So, you know, we missed him today. I still think there's a couple guys, including those two we just mentioned, that will be strong for the receivers if Bortles can just get confidence to do it. And that's just kind of a scary thought. So all in all, nothing real great from the day.
Before I let you pivot off of this game, one question about the Tennessee Titans would be, looks like Derrick Henry kind of took over. Did Murray come up limp? Did he get hurt? I was reading a little bit that he got hurt. Does it look like a big injury or just what happened there?
Well, credit to the defense, I think. We were holding the running game in check for a while, and Henry just looked a little bit better. I didn't even quite recall when Murray got hurt, but for the every time he was running, he was pretty much stopped, and that was happening for a while until the game was out of hand, and then that's kind of when Derrick Henry kind of took over in that portion of the game. But again, I don't know if that's really what won them the game or anything like that. It was kind of an inept offense, and you know, maybe the other side's defense. Not too sure.
Well, I think the good news is it's only one game. You're 1-1, which should put you tied for the lead in the division. So I think you kind of know that we're going to see if week one was the anomaly or if week two was the anomaly. Maybe the truth is somewhere in between.
Yeah, I think we'll see that the rest of the way, including going to London next week. So we'll find out.
Ouch. Well, as long as I got you on the line here, I figured we talked about my game, which I think has a little bit of a connection for you, seeing as 2020 they will be moving to your hometown.
Yep.
Easily the highlight of the game. I know you mentioned you hadn't seen it, and I hope that SportsCenter and NFL Network show some of the clips, but the highlight of the game was definitely, without a doubt, Marshawn Lynch just dancing on the sidelines in the second half. The game had kind of gotten out of hand a little bit for the Jets, and Marshawn Lynch is just dancing like it was beautiful. It was just joy, just unbridled joy from beast mode on the sidelines. Hometown kid comes back to Oakland, scores his first touchdown since 2015. And I mean, it's really something you need to take in this week. I think it's going to make your week a little bit better.
Well, you know, I didn't watch the whole game. I did have it on, so I saw a little bit. I didn't see that dancing. So maybe you're right. Good for that hometown guy. And I know they'll be in my hometown soon, which is still a little strange, but, One plug I'll make is in our Eliminator Challenge League. This was my pick, the Oakland Raiders. So, hey, there you go.
Yeah, I think I saw they were 45% of the nation who used ESPN were picking the Raiders. And to be honest with you, the first half, the Jets played a pretty good game. It was, you know, I think less than 2 minutes left to halftime. The score was 10 to 14, the Raiders had the lead. The Jets were getting the ball back. They were going to have 4, and their punt returner muffed the punt inside the 10-yard line. Raiders got the ball. Crabtree gets the second touchdown. I think he ended up getting 3 on the day, and just from that moment on, the Raiders just kind of steamrolled. I guess no real big takeaways from this game. I think to reiterate from last week, Carl Joseph had a big sack fumble. He's playing really well, better than he's played all of last year. And the Raiders running attack, Marshawn Lynch, wasn't even the leading rusher. Jalen Richard and Flash Patterson broke off a couple of long runs for touchdowns. But the Raiders offensive line was put together to run the ball. And Derek Carr being able to convert passes on third down is just a bonus. McCown played okay in the first half. He actually had a couple long runs for the 38-year-old, which, you know, him and Forte, I thought both played pretty well. And then their only wide receiver that I've ever heard of, other than the rookies that they just got in the trade, Javon Kearse, had two touchdowns. And just kind of surprising to me, through 2 weeks, the Raiders' defense, especially their linebackers, have not played well. And I just think it's going to be a matter of time until some team comes along and just really exploits that matchup between a good tight end and our linebackers. Because between the penalties and our linebackers just, you know, giving up anything they wanted in the air, just the Raiders' defense has a long ways to go. So don't move them too far up your power rankings this week.
Yeah, and I did see the first some of the first half, and it was close, and that was kind of a nice pass from McCown to Kearse. But, you know, kind of a I keep hearing this a little bit, and I agree with it. A good sign of a really good team is that you crush the bad teams, and I kind of agree with that. And, hey, that's what you did, 45-20. You know, maybe there's some defensive concerns, which I kind of had for the Raiders going into the year. But once they do get tested, then that's when you hope the offense with Marshawn Lynch and Derek Carr can just match them point for point and then come out on top in the end. So, you know, starting off 2-0, can't really ask for much better than that.
Yeah, so far so good. Definitely had a lot of fun watching football today. So if you get a chance, well, telling you, dial up some Beast Mode dance moves. Beast Mode dance moves. That's what I want to see Matt, the Titan super fan, work some of those dance moves into your burpees that you're going to put on the internet for us. I think we'll look forward to that too.
We don't need to see any Titan stuff anyway. We're good.
All right, man. Fair enough. Thanks for calling in. Good to talk to you, and I'm sure I'll talk with you soon.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, that's going to do it for another episode of the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you to all the super fans. If you want to read more of our recaps, previews, reviews, you can check out our website. That's nextfanup.wordpress.com. Definitely follow us. We're at NFU Podcast. If you want to interact with us directly, a lot of us have individual Twitters. You can find those on the website as well. If you have any questions, comments, if you want to get your thoughts on the air, email us. That's nextfanup@gmail.com. And of course, you can always just type it into the old Google machine, Next Fan Up Podcast. You'll find us there on Facebook all around. Like the show, tell a friend about the show, share it, leave us a review on iTunes, on Stitcher, on whatever your favorite podcast platform is. With that, I'm going to stop plugging. I'm going to start producing. Turn it over to Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.